You are listening to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated with the metals. I'm Rob, alongside Tori and Miles, and together we have over 75 years' experience advising on and brokering the precious metals. Each week, the three of us provide a technical analysis of the market charts and cover the underlying fundamentals and news that helps move and predict the markets. You can find us on our website at mcilvaney.com/news if you would like to see the charts that Miles will be putting forward. So without any further ado, Miles, take us into the charts, buddy.
Sure. Let's go ahead and kick it off this week with gold. At time of recording, compared to middle of the week last week, Wednesday afternoon. And today is a good example as to why, because it's Fed announcement day, and that's why we record on Wednesdays. So looking at gold, as I was getting charts together, up about just under 1%, about 0.8%, although not the whole story for gold this week, as it did break above 3,700, not once, but twice, but it is back down following the Fed announcement slightly, currently sitting at around $3,660. Moving over to silver real quickly, silver's up about 1.5%, but at one point, silver was up almost 5%. Guys, I think it was up about like 4.7, 4.8%. We did have a little bit of a pullback here, down a couple percent today, as well as a little bit yesterday. So silver now up 1.5% on the week, sitting at $41.60. The other white metals, platinum, also down about 1.3%. It is kind of on a rising trend line for platinum. We seem to put in highs right at the end of the week and then a little bit of a sell-off later in the week. Down from midweek last week, currently sitting at $1,365. And platinum sister metal, palladium, also down a little bit more, 2.2%. But just like platinum, palladium's actually showing a little bit of a potential rising trend now here over the last couple of weeks, even though it happens to be down since the middle of last week. So quick glance over at the paper markets with the S&P up 1% this week, currently sitting at 6,600 even, and also putting in a new high yesterday on Tuesday. That's a new all-time high for gold and a new all-time high for the S&P leading into the Fed announcement today. And finally, as you'd expect, with a decrease in the interest rates and the expectation of that coming over the last couple of weeks, the dollar is down another 1%, currently sitting at 96.9 on the dollar index. It was as low as 96.2, and that 96.2 actually breaks the July lows, which was our lowest price on the dollar over the last couple of years. So the US dollar has hit the lowest price since about February of 2022. Fun little additional data point there for you guys. The interest rate, which is now between 4 and 4.25, I believe is where we set the Fed funds rate here today, where the interest rate was back in 2022 when the dollar was where it is now, was about 1.75. We've kind of lost everything that the interest rate rise has given us, at least as far as dollar index purchasing power on an international scale. So fellas, Fed announcement day, do we want to start there? Is there anything specific we want to talk about?
I think that is the place to start because we've all been waiting with anticipation. The markets have been somewhat predictive with expectation on the rate cut. The only debate was whether it was going to be a 25 basis point, which is 0.25%, or a 50 basis point, 0.5%. And it came in at the former level rather than what the market had kind of hoped for on a 0.5% reduction in the Fed lending rate. So that should have some trickle-down effect across all markets, but certainly in regards to anything that anybody goes to buy, you would hope that borrowing costs would get a little bit cheaper. That's some of the positive news. The bad news is it can drive monetary creation and it can certainly push inflation higher. And I think that that is what the Federal Reserve was up against. I mean, there's a lot of comments about that, you know, from Chairman Powell, because it's not just what they do, it's what they say. The microphone wields more power almost than the decision.
Well, and the market already knew that it was going to be a minimum 25 basis points, and the consensus was that's what it would be. Now, they're expecting another 25 basis points cut before the end of the year. What did Powell say in that regard?
The markets have been hoping for two or to three more. J.P. Morgan Chase says four. In fact, I had somebody say, I sent out a monthly client letter saying, I predict this will be a one-and-done phenomenon based on, you know, inflation starting to dip just a little bit lower again, but the labor market negative news getting less negative here with the August numbers. So it's going to be a month-to-month deal. I mean, every month we're kind of a little surprised. I don't understand how you can drive the world's largest economy with month-old news rather than lifetime metrics. You know, anymore we live in a data-rich environment. We should know at any given point what's going on rather than waiting 8 days to 12 days after the month ends to find out.
But you have to put out the optimistic numbers in the moment so that you can do like a page 13 retraction a month later, like when we get into the jobs report and looking at some of the flip numbers when they go back and do revisions. So like you said, I think it is all about optics. What's the immediate optics of certain things coming out? And then what do we revise them back to a month or two later?
Well, supporting the one and done argument too is the fact that after the decision, from the press conference standpoint, the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell did say that they did it because the pressure to do so was overwhelming. And it wasn't internal pressure, it was external pressure. It's not the Board of Governors that have this overwhelming pressure. They're being pressured by Washington. Certainly the Trump administration is a big part of that. And so the only justifiable reason for cutting the rates was that the labor markets have softened, is the term. The adjustments to the jobs numbers have gotten so significant that they've been concerned that they actually need to stabilize and stimulate the labor market. But Powell said this isn't a tariff-driven inflation high market. They said that to the consumer, the pass-through from the tariffs has actually been pretty small. It's been slower and smaller than we thought. So to the Trump administration's credit, that's what they've been saying is like, look, stop using the tariffs as a reason not to cut, because it's not going to increase the inflation. And then he said that the labor market doesn't need to soften further. They hope that it doesn't, because their two objectives are employment, minimizing the unemployment rate, and obviously controlling the inflation rate, trying to keep it at the target of 2%. And where they start to widen, they need to attack one or the other. It's been inflation. Now that the labor market has gotten more of the attention, Powell said they don't really know where to put their efforts. It's going to take a couple of years for both of those to normalize, both the labor market and inflation numbers. More importantly, in terms of the microphone, he said there's no widespread support for a larger rate cut.
Oh, come on.
So as far as the economic numbers, there's no widespread support. I know.
I tell you, those two guys. Well, what's funny is I may have misheard, but during his opening statements before he got to the Q&A section, he also mentioned obviously all 12 voting members of the varying Federal Reserve banks around the country. They all put out their own projections and expectations to try to drive what they expect and how they expect to drive towards their unemployment and inflation goals, which is their dual mandate. And if I heard the numbers correctly, they were talking about targeting interest rates back down in like the 3% range by 2026, 2027. While it may not feel like there's widespread support for that, unless I misheard them today, it sounds like there could be an expectation that we might see interest rates continue to drop another percent, percent and a half, three quarters of a percent, something like that over the next year or two.
Yay. Yes. Now, let me say, while we're talking about widespread support, the World Gold Council is reporting that 95% of global central banks are saying that they will continue to increase their gold holdings for at least the next year, if not the next several years.
Oh, no joke.
That's a huge percentage. 95% of the global central banks saying they're going to continue to buy gold. How much gold has Chairman Powell bought for our Federal Reserve?
It's not just him. You can go Bernanke. You can go, you know, Janet Yellen. You can go all the way back to...
Almost back to Volcker.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to Volcker. I mean, there's been no increase to the number of gold ounces.
Now, why is the rest of the world adding to their gold reserves, and the U.S. hasn't bought any gold in decades?
I can't answer that question. I mean, I can speculate as to the fact that gold is a competitor to the U.S. dollar as world reserve currency, right? And we already supposedly own the most ounces of any country in the world. Now, the central bank doesn't own all of it. And then you've got the de-dollarization impact in the bond market. I think that it's a bond market competitor. That if our central bank, who is the world reserve currency creator, is buying gold, I think it could really roil our markets, our bond markets.
Well, and they're going to revalue the gold.
That may happen.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to take the 8,100 tons that they claim to own, and instead of valuing it at $42 something cents per ounce, Bessent is talking about revaluing it to, say, the market price, let's say $3,700. So that will show an increase of about $900 billion in the treasury assets. But that doesn't change the fact that $900 billion in lieu of $37 trillion of treasury debt is just a drop in the bucket.
Well, and it's if we own it. You mentioned the widespread support. You know, we're laughing. The widespread support, I don't think, is for the long-term goal of seeing interest rates lower. The widespread support was for this cut to be a 50 basis point cut.
Gotcha.
Half a point.
I misunderstood. So, I apologize.
No. But depends on who the widespread support is coming from, right? It's not within the central bank. It's from without the central bank. It's certainly Main Street. It's the Trump administration.
They would love a 50 basis point cut.
Sure. Everybody wants to borrow for less. Everybody's budget is tight. They've had to tighten the belt. Credit markets do drive our GDP activity. But all that being said, that does not mean that it's justified right now. And a lot has to change in order for us to be able to get to the 3%. And maybe that is better for the economy. But remember, as we had artificially manipulated our rates too low, we drove inflation too high. And that's what we have to be careful about. Miles, let's revalue gold. We're going to put you on the spot. From a chart standpoint, if they were going to hold off on revaluing the gold, where do you think they should wait for in the coming months?
That's a good question, actually, because you know they're planning on doing it. It's a question of when.
Amazing you asked me that question, because I was talking to a client of mine a couple hours ago today, and he brought up the same question. He goes, I keep hearing this rumor of a revaluation of the currency. And the big question, obviously, always coming in nowadays is, oh, the government's bringing in the digital aspect of currency, and they're going to bring gold back in, and they're going to do X, Y, and Z. And that led us to a nice long conversation about the sovereign wealth fund that we've talked about, and like what role could gold, could crypto, could all these monetized assets end up serving within the value of the company, or the Freudian slip there, the value of the country. Or maybe we start running the country like a company going forward. Yeah, the revaluation question is certainly pretty interesting to me. I don't know if that's something that the U.S. leads the charge on. I think one of the big things, if any of our listeners get the chance, I encourage you to go on over to our website. That's McIlvaney.com/news, as well as our show. Make sure to catch yesterday's edition of our podcast, hosted by our CEO and president, David McIlvaney, coworker of ours, Kevin Orrick, as well. They got pretty deep into this question on the idea of the percentage holding of gold internationally compared to other assets. You know, you're talking about gold taking up a position of around $25 trillion of all the gold on earth at current pricing. And then you take a look at all the other assets out there, real estate and businesses and stocks and bonds and yada, yada. And you put a dollar amount to all that, and you're looking at right near a quadrillion dollars. It was like 990 trillion. So you're talking about gold taking up about a 2.5% stake of global asset value. Here in the United States, gold doesn't take up a 2.5% stake of like United States asset value. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Tori, it takes up about 2% of just what, the treasury position?
Yeah. Back in the 70s, gold reserves were like 17%.
Of treasuries.
Of just treasuries. Yeah. The number of treasuries that are out there, gold represents now at these much higher prices, 2%. Back then, it was far more reasonable and responsible to have 17% of it reflected as the total U.S. gold reserve value compared to U.S. treasuries.
And again, that's just treasuries. That doesn't include real estate. That doesn't include businesses, the stock portfolios, the bond portfolios, just treasuries. So on a global scale, gold is 2.5% of everything. On an American scale, it's 2.5% of one piece of the pie. So a revaluation of metals, I don't know if that's something that's United States led. I don't think that would be a revaluation of gold itself. I think that would be a massive devaluation of the currency that might bring gold in line with that percentage makeup as it appears in Europe, in Asia, and other parts of the world as a whole.
Well, help me out here, though, Miles. I just see it happening in a vacuum. They revalue 8,100 tons. They're not adding to or taking away from. It just shows up on the balance sheet of the U.S. Treasury. It doesn't really change the market because they're just bringing it to the market price. So why would that be a devaluation of the currency?
Well, that's a fair question. I don't actually know on paper what they have the price valued at currently.
It's like $42.38, I want to say.
They're still on the 1972 pricing?
Yeah, which is part of why I asked. You know, it goes to $2 trillion, basically, I think, if they revalue at $3,500.
No, I don't think so. I think it's only $900 billion. I'll revisit that.
Okay. So it doesn't put a dent in 1 year of our deficit.
No, we burn.
Right. So we have a plus $2 trillion. Yeah. We have a $2 trillion plus deficit every year. Yeah. So if we revalue the gold and we used all of it for just our deficit, it would take care of 1 year. The next year, we're going to do the same thing and there's no more gold.
Yeah, that'd be about a trillion because it's like 80. I thought it was 8,700 tons.
Oh, I'm thinking 8,100.
It's 8,100, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. So, that'd be a little under a trillion.
Yeah.
At 37.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. Now. So, it just doesn't put a dent. Now, some of the theories out there, like if you're basing it off of the percentage of gold reserves compared to outstanding treasuries, like we talked about, is currently 2%. If they try to get back to somewhere around 17%, like it was in the 70s, well, now you're revaluing gold at $25,000 an ounce.
Right, but right. The rest of the world's already doing that. They're already upping their percentages from years ago to the last time we looked, it was somewhere around 26, 28% of their assets now in physical gold.
Yeah, so they're increasing their ounces, which we are not doing.
We are not doing.
They're marking it to market, which we are not doing.
And they continue to buy.
Yes.
Which we are not doing.
Which we are not doing, right? So we've been encouraged because this is the first time in 50 years that the federal government has actually legitimized gold in just talking about it.
Yeah, very true. Now, let's talk back to what Miles mentioned earlier. There's $25 trillion worth of gold out there in the world. How much of it is available to be owned, Miles?
Probably less than $25 trillion worth. that's a good question.
I'll take it all.
Yeah, you'll take all of it that's available. Right now, I think a fair amount. I'm not familiar of a number. If there's a client out there that has a number in their mind with a whole lot of zeros behind it, I think there's a very good chance we can fill that order. I think all three of us have certainly been in a position in the precious metals market where if you've got more than a zero behind how many ounces of gold you want to buy, you can't fill that order because there have been periods of time where
there's been a time we didn't have it.
The mindset of gold changes. And I think this is a good transitional conversation here because it starts with the idea of what Tori's asking. If we have a revaluation of the gold price, what does that look like? I look at the charts here and not even talking about a revaluation of the gold price. If we just look at the history of gold over the last couple of years, we're looking at consolidation followed by an 18-20% breakout. Consolidation, 20% breakout. Consolidation, 25%. Consolidation, 35%. So we just had another consolidation. We're up 11%.
So a half to third.
Yeah. Let's say we see something like a 25-35% increase coming off of this recent $3,300 consolidation range. That's putting gold somewhere into the low to mid, possibly as high as like $4,700. So let's say 20% rise puts us at $4,100 gold, 35% rise puts us at $4,700. So somewhere in the mid 4,000s is probably just where this leg of this next bull market runs to before we get to the next consolidation.
And I'll tell you something else too, Miles. People are concerned about price right now. We have ways of putting you in products where the prices were the same prices they were 19 years ago.
Right.
Okay. You know, 19 years ago, it took 5.7 half-ounce Gold Eagles to equal the price of one half-ounce $10 Indian MS-63. Now, you can buy an MS-63 for, 4 or 5% more than a half-ounce Gold Eagle. But the one thing I'm focused on is instead of being focused on price, people in the near future are going to be focused about availability.
Exactly. And that's what I'm getting at, is the price rises we're seeing now are, I don't want to say scaring people away, because that's certainly not the case at all. In fact, I've got more people calling me today than I did when gold was $2,500. So Correct. It's not that it's scaring people away, but it's the conversation is still about price. And what I'm trying to say is the conversation is going to remain about price as gold continues to rise here, but there will be a point down the road, and all three of us have seen this happen before. There will be a point down the road where the conversation no longer cares what the price is. And the problem is the price, when that happens, will already be significantly higher than it is now.
Well, like 2011, I want to say, we were limited to one gold kilo bar per customer per day. Do I have the year correct?
Yes.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Because I
that
remember
last
this.
Year, the bull market. Yep.
Yeah, that last run up, you know, it steadily climbed in 2009, 2010, and then midway through 2011 when we hit that 1,925 mark and demand was so high and supply was so low.
There wasn't anything available. You couldn't buy Krugerrands. You couldn't buy American Eagles, Double Eagles.
We couldn't get 100-ounce silver bars. Remember that?
Yeah.
Basically, all we had access to was 1,000-ounce bars unless you wanted to pay a ridiculous 50% over spot premium.
Oh, yeah.
For junk silver or silver eagles.
Yeah.
So there were things that you could get.
You could get. I stand corrected. You could buy it.
But there was a lot you couldn't buy, like the Krugerrand, like you're saying. I mean, there were just industry standard products we couldn't get. And I think that is a big takeaway. And if people are concerned about adding to their ounces here, which you ought to be doing every month anyway.
Right.
But if you're concerned about it from a price standpoint, well, then you can't be buying stocks. Miles, you started the show talking about the S&P 500 at a new all-time high.
Or you shouldn't be buying Bitcoin. Come on.
Right. It's at an all-time high. You can't buy a house because housing's at an all-time high. The stock market is one of those things. Food prices.
Yeah. We can't buy anything.
That's right.
But darn it.
The paradigm shift is, like you said last week, gold's not going up. The dollar's going down.
Correct.
That's not going to change in our lifetime. I don't see monetary policy switching course with any of these fiat currencies. The more they create and the more they put in circulation, the more that prices climb and the lower your purchasing power of that currency, and necessarily asset prices adjust higher. You keep buying the metal.
But if people are worried about running out of money, they've saved all this money, they're coming near to retirement, and they don't know what to do. Should they gamble in the stock market? Should they rush over to cryptos? You know, I have conversations with clients and they may have 300 ounces of gold. And I'm like, how much money do you need to live per month right now? And they may say $4,000. Okay. Let's say that's 1.5 ounces of gold now. Well, what happens if the price of living goes up, Rob? Well, the price of gold goes with it. So what it takes for you to live on 1.5 ounces of gold today, it's going to be 1.5 ounces of gold 10 years from now, regardless of what happens to the cost of living.
Exactly.
And that gold annuity, you know, do the math, 1.5 ounces of gold divided into 300 ounces. How many months do you have on your gold annuity? It's not hard.
That's why you keep buying.
Yeah.
Usually on a monthly basis. It's all about how many ounces you accumulate.
That's so true. And it's just the simplest formula that people can come up with. I mean, we had a couple in our office today, plenty of money, but they're worried about running out of it. But I can tell you, if you have 300 ounces of gold and your cost of living is 1.5 ounces to live on of gold valued today, that's 200 months, or put it in a different way, that's a 16-year annuity. You can turn it on, and for 16 years, you don't have to worry about what happens to the cost of putting food on the table or gasoline in the car or seeing the doctor for 16 years, 16 and a half years, actually.
Well, I think that's going to do it this week for Golden Rule Radio. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. If you liked what you heard, we encourage you to head on over to our website at mcalvany.com. That's mcalvany.com. You can find some additional information, letters, podcasts, and previous Golden Rule Radio episodes. You can also find us on Twitter at ICA Gold and Facebook at McIlvany Financial. And as always, if you'd like to discuss your personal portfolio with one of the advisors here at McIlvany Precious Metals, you can reach us at 1-800-525-9556. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great week.